You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was! Carlos Alberto!
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maradona, Martin, Maradona! An appealing for offside. The ball came back off the foot of Steve Hodge. And Maradona gives Argentina the lead. Protesting to the referee.
Halve finale komen. Ik heb opeens zo'n gevoel dat we in de halve finale gaan komen. Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal. Heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan. Dennis Bergkamp.
Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp.
So I'm delighted to be joined on the podcast this week by Tom from DNQ, Did Not Qualify Football on YouTube. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Nice yeah, I got you here. On because I wanted to talk a bit about the big football story of the week, which is, of course, the Oceania qualifiers. No Champions League. You know, this is the big story. But I wanted to, before we kind of get into that, maybe you want to briefly introduce yourself and also like what you do, what is DNQ Football and what do people go to your channel for?
Yeah, well, yeah, as I said, you know, thanks so much for kind of having me on. It's a bit of a kind of whirlwind one. I'm here in Doha at the moment, which is where the, like you say, the Oceania World Cup qualifiers are taking place. It's kind of New Zealand and the rest, as most people will sort of know it as a tournament. But yeah, probably about 6-7 months ago, me and my brother actually started DNQ Football, Did Not Qualify, as you've said, which is really just a YouTube channel, just 100% dedicated to kind of what we call like minnow nations. So sides that most people maybe haven't heard of or have only heard of in the capacity that they're not necessarily successful on the international scale. Obviously, Did Not Qualify. We came up with the name because it was, you know, what we're talking about. Ultimately, teams that have never qualified for their tournaments. You know, AFCON, the Euros, obviously the big one, the World Cup. And this kind of primarily centres around teams outside of the top 100 or so in the FIFA world ranking. So I'm out here in Doha for the Oceania qualifiers because no teams from this region are in the top 100. And as I'm sure we'll get onto, one of the teams was even unranked. Yeah. But yeah, excited to chat things through with you, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Do you, if a team does break in, say, like one of these big teams that it, you know, that you've covered, but maybe India or something like this, and they break into a top 100, do you have to decide that you're going to no longer cover them, or have you not? Is that a bridge that you cross when you come
We're sort of having to half cross it now because a few months ago, probably at the turn of the year, I did just a very short video on Gambia, the head of the AFCON. And it was just Gambia, the lowest ranked team at AFCON. And it was, you know, just a short video. We're not the biggest YouTube channel in the world, you know, so I put it out there. I thought it was a cool thing. They were 150th in the world, and they got to the quarterfinals of AFCON, which meant that we got, most of our fan base is now from the Gambia, or from, originally has heritage in Gambia. And now it's getting difficult. They're still outside the top 100. They're 125 now, but it is difficult because technically they did qualify. So it kind of goes against the name of the channel.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we have to kind of play it off, because equally we look at New Zealand and they're not really a team that we cover much, because for us, they're almost too good. But it's a really difficult one. You kind of have to kind of go off feel. Like, everyone knows about New Zealand. I listened to one of your shows recently. We were talking about the 2010 World Cup, you know, and New Zealand being unbeaten. And that people have seen this side. People know about this side. Everyone knows Chris Wood, Winston Reid. So you kind of just have to play it by ear a little bit. But hope, in a weird way, we hope that these teams do kind of fall outside the remit of us being able to talk about them, because that means that things are heading in the right direction.
On this show, we've basically become American Samoa ultras by a very which is why I'm rocking the American Samoan today, because from a very sort of circumnavigational route, in that we watched the Next Goal Wins documentary. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you've seen it, and sort of like fell in love with the team, and then we got Nicky Salapu, the goalkeeper from the American Samoan team, and you know, he was kind of famous for the being in goal when Australia scored 31 goals, to come on the podcast and talk about his story and stuff like this. And I mean, I think it's a fascinating part of the football world, in that, I mean, for one thing, these countries play like three games every like 4 years or something, basically. But American Samoa and Samoa, they're not in this tournament, right? Because they're not, I mean, there's a lot of withdrawals with COVID and everything, right?
It's a really, really difficult one. So there's 11 FIFA teams in the region. Only 8 of them came to Doha to compete. So the 3 missing out, like you said, American Samoa, Samoa. And the other one, which was due to play but had to drop out, was Tonga, because of their the natural disasters that kind of happened in that region. So they couldn't play. Which is a real, real shame, because I'm actually a bit of a Tonga fanboy, just from like old school, like World Cup games, you know, like FIFA World Cup games.
Did you play the 2010 one where you sort of try and win the World Cup with San Marino one?
Exactly, that one. And you could, that's my favorite game ever, because you could just flick the right analog stick and move around the globe.
I remember, it was amazing. I was like, why did none of the other, it literally did have every single nation in the world.
It did. So that's kind of where we originally, like, we didn't come up with the idea all the way back then, but we fell in love with these teams back then. And like you say, you know, players like Salapu and things like that, like these people who are just normal people that live in these crazy places and have jobs. And, you know, even at this tournament now, all this time later, 2022, a lot of the players for these teams are part-time. They play, they're fishermen, you know, they work at their local shops and things like that. There's very few that are even semi-pro. So it's amazing, really. And yeah, I was disappointed to not see Tonga, obviously understandable reasons, and disappointed as well for American Samoa and Samoa, but just because of COVID stuff, they couldn't go. And that's the reason why the tournament's here in Doha as well, because no country in the region was willing to host it because of COVID.
Okay.
Obviously we'll get on to why that's kind of ironic, I'm sure, because of everything that's happened here so far. But yeah, so 8 of the 11 split into two groups and playing the most games that they've, like you say, played since the last World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, and exactly. And I mean, obviously it's a shame, I think, that it's not taking place in the region, I mean, where it's originally normally played and so this, but also it kind of gives the opportunity for these teams to play in these state-of-the-art, they're basically the World Cup stadiums, right? Like these stadiums, which these players would never get the opportunity to play at.
I mean, I think one of them's a World Cup stadium, and the other one is probably as close to as it can be. These are plush stadiums, and the quality of pitch is, I had to actually ask one of the guys from the OFC, I was like, is that AstroTurf or is that actual grass? Because it was just so pristine. And I mean, these players are not used to playing on this kind of quality surface at all, you know, in their home regions. They kind of lost a little bit the advantage that they had over New Zealand in the...
New Zealand on a bog field.
Exactly. Whereas here it hasn't been like that. So quality is just shining through, and some of the teams are a lot better than others, even though you might not sort of think it. The technical ability between different sides has been kind of really, really interesting to see. But they've got no leveler now against New Zealand, especially with Chris Wood and everyone turning up now.
Okay. So I presume the games are all taking place in there's no crowds or anything, right? Does that make it feel weird when you're there?
I'm not really sure. It's so at times I'm just so in awe of the fact that I'm in Doha watching these teams from all the way around the world. But I think that there is an element to it that really the atmosphere is made by the benches and the representatives from these teams. Like the Fiji New Caledonia game, at points you wouldn't know there was no crowd because the benches from both teams and the kind of delegates from those nations.
I was watching one of the highlights of the New Zealand game, and you can hear the bench. Something that you kind of got used to in COVID is you can pick up on the players swearing and stuff at each other, and then definitely hear that again.
And I think that's maybe made me kind of more accustomed to it, you know, watching the Premier League and things like that with no crowd. You just kind of do get a bit more used to it. But I think for me, there's such a focus really on like the quality of teams that we're seeing, and actually, you know, how good are they? Because you watch a highlights reel and it skews the vision slightly of how the teams actually get on. And it's been an incredible tournament. I mean, the COVID has hit big time a couple of teams and has kind of ruined Group A. So Group A was supposed to be the Solomon Islands, Tahiti, Vanuatu and the Cook Islands. But both Vanuatu and the Cook Islands have had to pull out because the full squad has got COVID.
And where would they have been? Would Vanuatu have been looking to get out of the group? Because I know Cook Islands were a complete unknown because they don't even have a world ranking. But what about Vanuatu?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. Cook Islands, they managed to get their first game in against the Solomons and lost 2-0, which they were celebrating as almost like a win because, you know, they haven't played since 2015, actually, the Cook Islands. Vanuatu would have definitely looked to get out of that group. They'd have probably eyed up Tahiti as the side they'd have picked to it. They've got some players that play for that region at a good level in like the New Zealand leagues. So they would have definitely been looking, and they didn't even get to play a game. So they've traveled all the way here and they didn't even get to kick a ball in the end. So, but it's interesting because they did play a pre-tournament friendly against Fiji and lost 3-0. So I don't know. It's strange. You always think on paper, these sides should progress, but some of the club players and individuals don't quite perform at the same level when they're around everyone else.
Just thinking, the climate is weeping at this tournament. But
I mean, it's obviously with the COVID stuff's kind of killed Group A, and now there's only two teams left, and only two teams go through. So they play each other.
So they're still playing the match, are they? Okay, they're playing tomorrow.
Yeah, I was. It's really difficult because essentially they will both go through to the quarter. They'll both go through to the semi-final. This is almost like a quarter-final, but they'll both go through, and effectively the winner just avoids New Zealand in the semi-final, and then we'll obviously look to meet them in the final. So it is an important game for FIFA World Rankings, for confidence, just for, you know, playing more games as a squad. But equally, with everything COVID, I wouldn't have been surprised if OFC had have just sort of sacked off that game and just thought, you know what, let's just make sure, protect the players and get through to the semi-finals. And I think the only reason why they haven't done that is obviously because it would be a difficult decision about who goes through top. But secondly, because Tahiti haven't played a game yet.
Yeah, so it would look very odd for a team to play a team which has played, you know, three group games already, whatever, wear and tear with that. And then their first game is in the semis. But how have New Zealand... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and that's why it's difficult, though, for the teams in Group B, because Papua New Guinea or Fiji is going to go home, but they'd have played three games. Tahiti will play one, and they could lose 10-0, and they'll still get through to the semi-final. So it is quite a difficult one from that stance.
And how New Zealand look? Because, I mean, they only won the first game against Papua New Guinea with a relatively late goal. But, I mean, their sort of issue has been, from what I've read, is basically their because it's taking place, it started outside the international window, their squad is kind of coming in stages.
So they've I think today was the last day that they turned up, actually, at the last few players. So they were expecting to not have Chris Wood until today, but Newcastle released him slightly early. I think, you know, the way that Newcastle have been playing, they probably didn't need him. No disrespect to Chris Wood, but their first game against Papua New Guinea was always going to be the only game where I really thought there could be an upset here, because it was the weakest possible New Zealand side against a fresh and hungry Papua New Guinea. And Papua New Guinea are... It's difficult to say at this point. They could lose their next game and go home, but they're probably, from what I've seen, the second best side. They're probably the side that's going to look to get to the final. So they've got a centre-back, Alwyn Komalong, who, in fact, both centre-backs, the Komalong brothers, they both grew up and played most of their youth football in Germany. And you can just tell that they've just got that little bit more discipline to their game. They're a little bit more cultured. And if you have two good centre-backs at this tournament, it's worth its weight in gold, because most of the attacking players, whilst they're physical and quick, the ability, the technical ability and the football understanding isn't there as much. In that first game, Papua New Guinea could have easily got a draw. They don't have much of an attacking threat. And Winston Reid did play for New Zealand, which made it just easy. But that's the closest, in my opinion. I then watched, obviously, New Zealand 4, Fiji 0. That could have been any score, really. I don't know what the actual possession stat was, but it felt like at least like 75% to New Zealand. It was a battering. And to be honest, New Zealand now, in the last game, the manager's already said they're going to basically play their reserves because it doesn't matter against New Caledonia. They'll probably still pick up a win.
Caledonia are already eliminated, right? I think
they're going home. Yeah, so they were pretty devastated, and they kind of underperformed. But they lost to Fiji in the last minute, and then lost to Papua New Guinea as well. So they're going home on 0 points, probably, provided they lose to New Zealand. Because of New Zealand's goal difference being +5, they're going to come top of the group. Even if Papua New Guinea win, you know, it's unlikely that they wouldn't come top of the group, even if they lost. But this New Zealand team now, with Chris Wood, with Reid at the back, they've got a few players that maybe aren't known in the European leagues as much, but there's a defensive midfielder, Clayton Lewis, who's brilliant.
They have a couple of players who've joined from the League of Ireland as well. I think they came.
Have they?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they do. And you know, these are players who are still comfortably better than 99% of the players for the other teams. The best player, that Alwyn Komalong player that I was speaking about for Papua New Guinea, their best player, if I had to sort of map him to a level in the English football pyramid, he'd probably be a good League One player.
Okay.
And that just sort of compares, you know, so he's a good player. He could be a professional player. Yeah. But there's still a big difference between that and the players that New Zealand are rocking up with.
Yeah, like New Zealand's probably like lowest starting player would be at that, relatively that level, right? And as an average, they're at that level, right?
Yeah. They would, for me, if New Zealand national team played in the championship, they would probably come low mid-table, which is, you know, not a bad feat. They've got a few players. I mean, Winston Reid is still he doesn't get out of second gear. It's just easy for him. But across the board now, they've got a lot of just good players. I think that they will win this tournament, and then they get to the inter-confederational playoff. And that's kind of where I'm just not sure if they can then get past that next stage.
I always get confused. Which continent are they playing? Is it they're playing against North America, right? I think this time.
Yeah. So this time around, so this is the last World Cup where it will quite work like this, because next World Cup's the 48 team World Cup. But for this one, they've been paired against. So you get Asia, South America, North America, and Oceania all have a 0.5 at the end of their places.
Yeah.
But they've been drawn against what will be the fourth placed CONCACAF team, which is looking likely to be Panama.
Yeah.
They definitely
much prefer that, because then Chile they got last time, right? Which was a bit of a mismatch.
Everyone wants to avoid the South American team, which I think could still be Uruguay this time around, because there's some teams that have done really, really well. So, as long as you avoid South America, you're in the
spot. Then you're happy,
So I think it's Australia. I think Australia would have been the Asian team, I think.
Oh, okay.
I don't think that's final yet, but I think that it's likely to be Australia. So you kind of see, you know, you'll have, you know, potentially a Chile or a Uruguay or someone like that. And then the other three teams being potentially Panama, Australia, New Zealand. You can see the difference there.
What do you think about the kind of debate around, you know, New Zealand playing in this tournament, where, you know, people say they're far too good for this, or like Australia said in the early 2000s that they should play that, and then they went to play in the Asian continent. Do you think there is, but I mean, also, I guess in the future, having a one guaranteed spot from the in the region will actually be in New Zealand's favour.
Yeah, I mean, I think for New Zealand, it's a difficult one because these games, they're an interesting challenge. They have international friendlies against sides. Well, I think they've played Qatar semi-recently, you know, Curaçao, sides that are a decent level from all around the world. Mm. And then they have this tournament, and then these are the World Cup qualifiers, and these are the easiest games that New Zealand play. Yeah. So it's a strange kind of dynamic. But like I say, for the next set of World Cups, there'll be 1.5 places available to this region, which means that New Zealand will be in. And then, which I sort of get, and you look at it and you think, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But then New Zealand, it'll be interesting to see in the future. I don't know if it'll happen, but with the expansion of the World Cup and then that region getting 1.5 places, is it too easy for New Zealand to get into the World Cup? And I think that's the question.
It feels like it would be almost a guaranteed every time.
Yeah, you know, you play 5 games and you're in the World Cup because you're New Zealand and you're playing against like Tonga and American Samoa, you know, so it's difficult. Mm-hmm. And you think, but do they then move to Asia? Because is that fair?
Or, but I mean, or then it also
Australia come back?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, it's difficult.
But I think also people sometimes don't quite realize like how big these countries are in the Pacific. Mm. Like, I mean, we had, we spoke to Paul Watson, who wrote a book about coaching football in Pompeii in Micronesia. And he said one of the challenges that, I mean, the biggest challenges of the region is, you know, that you have sort of islands, which are, you think, okay, well, you can just nip over and play to the next island, but it's actually, you know, like 8,000 kilometers or something, you know, between them and stuff. But I mean, traditionally, what I thought is the Solomon Islands have been New Zealand's biggest challenge in the region. I know they took them to penalties a few years ago. Was that right? Was that continental tournament?
Yeah, they've had lots of like small. The two biggest challenges for New Zealand tend to be Papua New Guinea and the Solomon Islands. In various tournaments across the last however long. Those are the sides that pose the biggest threat. And when they play kind of intercontinental Pacific games and things like that, New Zealand normally send their under 23s for those kind of tournaments. Okay. But it is still a good barometer. They are still the size of the challenge. So the last Pacific games, to kind of put it into context, like how much these teams actually challenge, Tonga played the New Zealand under 23s and lost 14-0. So that kind of puts into perspective the fact that then if the Solomon Islands are 0-0 or 2-0, there's a huge gulf in class there.
Yeah.
And I think Vanuatu also beat Tonga like 8-0 in that tournament.
Okay.
So there's this big disparity. Solomon Islands futsal team is a decent futsal team.
Mm-hmm.
And Papua New Guinea have got a few decent players, but there's no team that across the board is good.
Yeah,
you know, and we'll compete with every player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen those. I mean, I don't know if you've already seen that, you know, those amazing pictures of like sort of football on the Solomon Islands. And you think, okay, like the Pacific, it's a rugby place, but I mean, there's like these huge like grass banks with loads of people there. So it kind of does. I mean, there is, you know, the opportunity for football development there. It's just got to take time. And I guess, I mean, maybe with 1.5 World Cup qualifying from the region, that will kind of give more of a boost to like the rest of the, that is not New Zealand, right? That they have something they can actually kind of work towards.
Yeah, I was speaking to a guy from the OFC that's in charge of club development and things like that right across the region. And he was saying that already following the announcement, there'd be 1.5 places. Teams are starting to sort of buck up their ideas a little bit. Teams are starting to think, okay, let's build proper stadiums. Let's get proper infrastructure, grassroots teams all the way up because, you know, okay, maybe not at the next World Cup, which is only 4 years away, but perhaps the one after. You're giving yourself, exactly. You're giving yourself that huge, huge period of time, whether it's kind of 8, 10, 12 years to embed. You know, if you've got players now that are like under nines, under tens, for those next World Cup, they'll be eligible to play, but you need to kind of start at that level. And also one thing they need to improve upon, and the kind of main barometer really in between World Cup qualifiers, is the winner of the OFC like Champions League. So the Champions League of that region does go to the Club World Cup, but in like the preliminary round. So they don't kind of ever get to that kind of finals that like the teams like the Liverpools and things like that get to. The big barometer will be if one of them can kind of beat like the Middle Eastern Champions League winners and things like that. If one of them can kind of get at least past the first few kind of preliminary rounds through to getting close to that main Champions League, that then maybe we'll see, okay, the club football's stepping up and maybe the international team as well, because that's got to be the foundation. I think with this region, more than any other, they have real limited ability to get players from Europe, get players from abroad. You know, we see in the Caribbean, so many players now are actually based in Holland or France or England. Yeah. You know, the Haiti team all play pretty much in the French second division. Where, you know, the Cook Islands, they don't have that. You know, the Solomon Islands don't have that. They play in their own leagues predominantly. So the real challenge for them is it needs a whole big infrastructure boost. It needs a 10-year program. And then maybe one of these sides at the 2030 World Cup might pose a serious threat to someone else.
Yeah. So, I mean, looking back to this tournament, I mean, so the final is next Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And presuming it's New Zealand and another, who are you looking, who you think is likely it's going to be? And do you think there's any, I mean, what percentage of chance of an upset do you think there will be?
I think that the side that would cause them the biggest trouble is Papua New Guinea. The toughest thing about calling this is that New Zealand are the only team in the final. If Papua New Guinea could lose to Fiji if they get it wrong tactically. They played a high line against New Caledonia and they got lucky with a few slightly dodgy offside calls. Okay. Fiji have probably the quickest striker I've ever seen in the flesh. If they get the offside trap wrong, they could, and Krishna's a good player. If they somehow lose to Fiji, then I think it's just going to be so easy for New Zealand, because Papua New Guinea's defensive solidity is kind of what kept New Zealand at bay.
Yeah.
The Solomon Islands, I don't think, could pose too much of a threat to New Zealand. I think it would be an entertaining game, but I think New Zealand would win it. But the biggest kind of question mark for me is, understandably, what on earth are Tahiti going to bring to this tournament? They've not played a game yet. They get through to at least the semis. They could be amazing. I doubt it, but they could be. But if I had to kind of put my neck on the line and pick a team, I would say the biggest threat to New Zealand would have to be Papua New Guinea at this point.
I hope if, I mean, I have fond memories of Tahiti from that Confederations Cup tournament. That was how many years ago it was against Spain. I remember that they scored, I think, against Nigeria. And I think it was like 6-0 at the time. They made it 6-1. And they all brought out the canoe celebration. It was
2013, I think that was, which is, you know, getting mad 9 years ago now. So a very different looking squad from them. But I don't know. I think I'd be surprised if the Solomon Islands didn't beat Tahiti in this game. And then you'll be looking at Tahiti, New Zealand semi-final, which New Zealand would probably win. And then the other one being potentially Solomon Islands, Papua New Guinea, which I think would then potentially be, you know, really kind of the game of the tournament, because the New Zealand games, certainly from our point of view and our coverage, the New Zealand games are the games that people care about the least because they just know that New Zealand are going to win it.
Yeah, it's a thing.
So I don't think they even really gear up. I mean, Chris Wood's just broken the all-time New Zealand scoring record with like 32 goals or something. But I've seen it from his stats that he scored 8 of those against the Solomon Islands. So again, it does skew it a little bit, doesn't it?
So maybe he's hoping that they reach the final.
Probably, yeah, he could get to double figures against them. But I mean, it's if a team were to cause them an upset, it would have to be a Papua New Guinea, and it would have to be just a 0-0 and see how far you can hold them.
Oh, okay, cool. Are you sticking around until the final next week, or are you heading back?
Tomorrow is actually my last day, so I get to see the rest of the group games, and then I'm back. So I'll be watching the semi-finals and the finals from the sunny climes of the United Kingdom.
Nice.
Who
have you enjoyed? I mean, just around the tournament, there. Who is it from the teams? Have you been able to speak to anybody in particular that you've kind of enjoyed speaking to, and you know, they're just telling their stories around their football story?
Yeah, I mean, before the tournament, we managed to get a few like quite cool interviews in. One of them was Alwyn Komalong, who's, you know, it's a really fascinating story for him coming from Germany. But also Timo Jankowski is another one as well, which is a name that most people won't kind of recognize potentially unless you're from kind of Switzerland or Germany. So he's the technical director for Fiji. So it's not the manager, it's the technical director looking at kind of the next generation of talent in Fiji and things like that. And he came on our show to kind of just talk about his project. He used to be assistant manager of Grasshopper Zurich in the in the Swiss league, and he's had various roles at various different clubs as well. And then he's taken on this kind of 5-year project now in Fiji to basically try and get them to the 2026 World Cup, or get them as close as possible. And hearing his story, and so we've been quite close with like the Fiji camp and speaking to them about, you know, their squad, and it's difficult because they've got Krishna, who's the best player by a mile, and how do you use him in the team because he doesn't touch the ball much. But I think it's been amazing for them. If anyone gets the chance to kind of watch their pre-match rituals, and if there's any footage or any content that comes out from their dressing rooms or anything like that, the togetherness of this side is crazy. And they are probably the story. There was a guy, Nabil Beg, who, whilst he was out here in Doha, turned 18. And it's just like, what an experience for these players that have never left the islands.
Yeah.
Which I know is the same for every team, but I feel like we've probably been closest to Fiji and their kind of story. Obviously, you know, primarily a rugby nation, but really trying to, their, you know, actual domestic league out there is big. It's a big league in the region. They're kind of football mad. And just like hearing about and learning about the kind of culture and everything that's different, and the kind of the ability that they've got physically is amazing. You know, they're all tall, powerful, quick, strong.
Yeah.
And if they do manage to get that kind of technical ability side, a little bit of that European kind of composure, and just added that in, I think that they'll be a side to watch in the future, but they've been an entertaining side to watch throughout this tournament as well.
Oh, cool. Well, I'll be tuning in for their game against Papua New Guinea tomorrow. I'm hoping they head on. Thank you so much, Tom, for joining me on the podcast. Where can people go to find out more?
The number one place for us is on YouTube. So that's just DNQ Football on YouTube. We have got Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all that good stuff as well to kind of get the name out. But YouTube's the number one place. We got some really cool interviews coming up with loads of people, actually. So the tournament's kind of coming on from this. We've got the AFCON qualifiers, which are taking place today, and they're going ahead. Yeah. Then you've got the CONCACAF Nations League as well. So loads of interviews from loads of players from those regions, which is going to be awesome. Can't wait to get into it. But yeah, thanks for having me on the podcast. It's been really good fun. And all the best for the future, mate.
All right. Cheers, Tom. Have a good evening and enjoy the rest of your time in Doha.
Thanks, mate. Speak soon.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Network.